Thank you. Well, it's a pleasure to be here. I face a little bit of a challenge for a general audience to tell you about the quantum world and some things that you don't really encounter, maybe ever in your lifetime. So I'll give it a go. I'm going to tell you about quantum information science. It's a new field of science born in roughly the last 20 years. And some broad comments about it, but then to make it more concrete to you, tell you about some specific examples. My challenge is going to be to explain to you what in the world a picture like that might mean and what the word entangled means to a physicist. So the quantum world, it's part of your life. This picture is an amazing achievement of our science and technology. We all live, everybody here knows, based on the scientific principles, mostly from the first half of the 20th century. Those principles then spectacularly brought to new technologies. One of my heroes is this man, Gordon Moore. You know, Moore's Law and the exponential rise in computational capability, but there's also been an exponential explosion in communication capability through the worldwide network. And those continue unabated through discoveries in basic science, even now, for photons, light, as communicated through the internet, and for new kinds of electronic devices. So that's going well. I'll have some comments at the end that it's, you know, the end is in sight for this exponential growth. But an area that's maybe not so familiar to you is this new science of quantum information, which comes from the marriage of quantum mechanics on the one hand, which is maybe not too familiar to you, but information science, computer science on the other. And when you put those two things together, it's kind of like having the US and the French in an alliance. They normally aren't, but they came together to make quantum information science with spectacular consequence. And the consequence is the foundations, I'm talking about basic research, fundamental research, for the way we process information and communicate information. So communication and computation were laid in the beginning of the 20th century by these gentlemen. And it was discovered only in the early 80s that if we try to think about how the quantum world, individual atoms, photons, electrons, if we use those quantum things individually and their real quantum properties, what would that bring to quantum information? And what it brings is what I call here quantum miracles. I can't tell you in detail, they're kind of complicated. What's an algorithm? It's some, in this particular case, the most famous example is some kind of number theoretic problem that can be solved on a quantum computer and can't be solved on a classical computer. And the fact that this number theory problem can't be solved on a classical computer would be neither here nor there, except it's the basis of electronic commerce in the world and national security in the world. You can send a secret securely, your credit card number or nuclear codes, because of this number theoretic problem, which now is at risk if I could build a quantum computer. So there's a number of algorithms that and miracles that are of the ilk, with quantum resources, we can do these things which are classically impossible. And because of that, there's been a revolution brought by quantum information science in our understanding and our laboratory capabilities for how we process and distribute information. And I want to use this kind of quantum networks. The title is Quantum Internet, but the vehicle of a quantum network to give you some idea, some intuitive idea of what's going on here. So think of a quantum node. It's just a little baby computer, but in the quantum world, it's maybe got electrons in it or atoms or something you can manipulate quantum mechanically. These nodes are going to talk to each other, just like your processor talks to the memory on a computer, but they have to talk quantum mechanically. And if you can do that, if you can wire up something like that, then you can do miraculous things both in your ability to communicate. You can communicate in a way which is provably secure, that's impossible in the classical world, and you can commute and you can do computation. So theoretically, it's quite interesting. experimentally, a lot of really interesting thing happens when we ask, well, how do we build such things? One of the ones I'll tell you about is what's called quantum teleportation. It's not going to be that we're going to send people from place to place, but I'll tell you what it's going to be in a moment. So how do we go about doing that? Apparently, it's worth the effort. There are things we could do that we couldn't do otherwise. So that network had these little cubes. So what you should think of is Legoland. We need Lego blocks which have quantum functionality that we can wire together to build new kinds of physical systems of a sort that have never existed in the physical world. And with those systems, we want to do new kinds of things across really all of science, but I'll concentrate on physics. And ultimately, one day, we'll wire up networks like this, just like the regular internet, but it'll have quantum functionality for secret sharing, for certain kind of capabilities that classical networks will never have. There's another perspective, it's a little harder to communicate even than that, and that's that if you think about this quantum network, it really, in each one of these little boxes, is something quantum mechanical. It's meant to do quantum tasks. So you can think of it as an electron, a spin. And if there were two spins, and you bring two spinning electrons, two bar magnets together, they interact. Well, I can make these things interact in a quantum network simply over the channels. So networks like these can emulate other physical systems. They can simulate physical systems in a way which Richard Feynman discussed many long time ago before this ever got started. And that simulation of certain kind of exotic materials cannot be done on classical computers. It's beyond our capability and always will be. So quantum computers, quantum networks like this could help us discover new kinds of materials. So what's in the box? What are our Lego blocks that we're going to build new kind of physical capabilities with? One thing is this little toy picture. There are two mirrors. This is about 3 millimeters. The gap is about 10 microns, the tenth of the width of your hair. And that little dot's one atom. So to do quantum things that let us build quantum computers, quantum networks, we have to control quantum objects like atoms and photons. And a little box like this can actually serve as a transistor in your computer. Electrons come together, they come to a gate, and they're gated in or out. A little box like that can gate photons, one by one by one, if it has the right capabilities. 30 years ago, a little box like that needed tens of thousands of photons to make a transistor, a quantum transistor. And now you can see that over the years, this is from work in my group, we've reduced that number by 9 orders of magnitude to 10 to the minus 5, we project. So light comes as one photon. If we can have interactions that are sensitive at the level of 1/100,000th of a photon, then one photon's a big deal, and we can build quantum transistors out of single photons, and we have. The point I want to make with this view graph is, though, around about here is when quantum information science got started. Isn't that exciting? But my group and others around the world got started there. Why? Science for science's sake. What can we do? What can't we do? Well, let's figure out if we can control single photons, long before this quantum information stuff was invented. So the time scale for advancing science, in many cases, is long before you know what it's going to be good for. Science for science's sake, over decades, well, when something pops up, we've been working, it's going to be there. Another thing we can put inside this little box is a bunch of atoms. And then we're going to write and read. But we're going to write and read in a quantum way. So into this pool of maybe 100,000 atoms, we're going to dissolve one quantum of light. And then it'll be a memory. So we dissolve it in there like a sugar cube. When we want it, we're going to reconstitute it and have it come out as a light pulse. We know how to do that. Furthermore, we know how to make a system like I showed you at the very beginning. This is the 10,000 atoms. It's about 100 microns long. It's a small chunk of your hair and tens of microns in diameter. And there's another one up here. And when I said we're going to dissolve the sugar cube, the photon, in one or the other, well, in fact, we're going to put part of it up here and part of it down there. So that you might ask me, okay, this quantum of light, which is called the photon. You put it here, did you? Well, I put it there, yes. Well, you could have put it there, did you? Yes. And then you would ask, well, where is it? And in the quantum world, it's actually possible to be in both places at the same time. These two things are 3 meters apart in a laboratory, and they have one quantum of light stored here or there, and you say, where is it? And I'll say, yes, it's in both places at the same time. And mathematically, that's called, in physics, entanglement. This is something called the wave function, but you can just think of it as the yellow boxes, which mean it's here and there at the same time. And in the classical world, that's impossible. You might not know if it's here, you might not know if it's there, but there is an objective reality. It's one place or the other. You just don't know. In the quantum world, there is no such thing as an objective reality. Things can be both places at the same time. What can you use that for? Well, let's get ready for the next World Science Forum. We're going to need a quantum internet by then in Brazil. So we're going to have quantum nodes, quantum channels. And how are we going to use it? Well, there's a basic paradigm. We need to entangle things across the network. What does that mean? Well, we actually know. We need to put a piece of a photon here in a memory and a piece of it there. And where is it? Well, it's in both places at the same time. And having done that, then we're going to teleport. We're not actually going to send the message over a wire or a fiber like we do in normal communication systems. We're going to teleport it. So what's quantum teleportation? It's a protocol invented in 1993 by the people listed. So imagine that Victor in say, Recife, wants to communicate to Victoria in, São Paulo. Victor wants to send some unknown state. Think of it as a fuzzy little beam of light. So he goes to Alice. Alice works for Google in Recife. And Bob works at the other internet provider in São Paulo. And Victor sends his state to Alice. She has a classical channel, does Alice. That's just the regular internet. But they share these yellow boxes. A piece of this photon is here and here. So Alice sends her quantum state, this fuzzy light beam. Victor sends the fuzzy light beam. Alice measures it, destroys it, but because she has this entanglement, a piece of a state that lives here and here at the same time, she can send a message to Bob, and Bob can completely reconstruct the output state perfectly. And the amazing things about this protocol are that if it's a quantum state, whatever that means, if you look here at the information Alice sends, it's just like noise. It's random. This entanglement that was sent to both of them, this here or there, if you looked at the channel, if you intercepted it, it's just like noise. It's like your TV when it doesn't work. Shh. Yet somehow, no information here, no information there, somehow the quantum state goes from there to there. It's really quite remarkable. And if you do that right, you know, Google's in the news for eavesdropping on people. If you do this right, then Victor can send this state to Victoria, and it will be perfectly secure by the laws of quantum mechanics. It will be Victoria's secret. Can you do this in the lab? Yeah. My group, other groups, this is a bunch of lasers on the table. This is the thing we're trying to do, send a laser piece of light from here to here and have it kind of hop in the intermediate space. A laser beam propagates just like my laser pointer, disappears, reappears over there, and it does it in a way which has high fidelity in this quantum teleportation scheme. So what's the grand view? Quantum information science is a new paradigm for thinking about things, algorithmic capabilities, measurement, how well can you measure things, but also for how we go about doing experimental physics. It gives, apart from its scientific interests, qualitatively new possibilities for computation and communication. And it's really been a real paradigm shift in physics in a way I can't tell you too much about. This is from work of Jim Eisenstein at Caltech. This is the little thing's meant to be an electron. You know, electrons are spin up, spin down. They're what are called fermions. And here's a bunch of them. And in certain kinds of systems, the electrons can become not a fermion or a boson, until now thought to be the fundamental constituents of nature, but they can be a new kind of particle which has neither Fermi nor Bose character. Okay, new kinds of materials. What about other possibilities? This is a black hole, or some kind of rendition of that. And Black holes are weird because you throw stuff in, it never comes out. That's irreversible, but a number of physicists around the world have begun to think about fundamental things like black holes from the perspective of quantum information science. And in fact, you can get the information back out, apparently. The broader impacts of quantum information science at the boundary of science and society, technology, this paradigm of exponential increase in internet capability, computational capability, is already beginning to turn over. We need to think about new paradigms for how we process and distribute information. That requires a multidisciplinary effort, and most importantly, it requires brilliant young people, theoretical, experimental, across science and technology, and young people, never mind if I like this, are really drawn to this new field of science and technology. And that's where the future gets invented. You know, support things, help the young people find the future. Furthermore, this is all kind of weird if, you know, it's weird to me and I know the mathematics. And the public is interested in this, so it's a way to interface with the public. And just to conclude, there is a report on the internet. The President Obama's Office of Science and Technology offered an assessment of both of the science and impact on society of quantum information science, and it's available here. Thank you.